As we age, many things can become more challenging, including driving. This hour, how to drive safely into our golden years. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we'll discuss the problems older drivers typically face, such as reduced night vision, as well as tips for dealing with these concerns, and how new technology can help. My guests, Larry Nepple, an instructor for the AARP's Driving Safety Program, and Dan McGeehee of the UI's National Advanced Driving Simulator. What challenges have you or an older loved one faced behind the wheel? Join our conversation. First, this news. As we age, many things can become more challenging, including driving. So this hour, we want to talk about how to drive safely into our golden years. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Iowa ranks fourth in the nation in percentage of population over the age of 65 that drives. And Iowa is second only to Florida in percentage of licensed drivers over 85. This hour, we'll discuss the problems older drivers typically face, as well as tips for dealing with these concerns, how you can manage and accommodate common age-related changes in things like vision, hearing, reaction time. Later in the hour, we're going to delve into new technology that can help older drivers in particular. Also, how to know when an older loved one needs to retire from driving, how to have that very difficult conversation, and alternatives to out there for non-drivers for getting around town, maintaining your independence. Joining us this hour, Larry Nepple is with us. He's an instructor for the AARP's Driving Safety Program. Hi, Larry.
Thank you, Ben.
How many years have you been teaching the program?
I'm in my 15th year.
All right. A lot of stories to tell. We'll hear, no doubt, a few of them this hour. Dan McGeehee is with us as well. You've heard him on this show several times. The University of Iowa's National Advanced Driving Simulator, where he is director, also professor in the University of Iowa's Department of Industrial and Systems Engineering. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Ben.
We want to reach out to you, our listeners, to drive this hour, so to speak, with your narratives, your stories, your questions. What challenges have you or an older loved one faced behind the wheel? Tell us your stories of driving and getting older. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You could also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's get a picture of this. Dan, can you help me out here? Looking at a lifetime of driving, statistically speaking, what can be said about age groups and how that changes as we start young? I guess in Iowa, you can, under certain circumstances, drive at the age of 14 on into the later years of life. What can be said statistically about safety and age?
Well, as you mentioned, Ben, 14 years old is Iowa, as what you can start to drive independently, about 14 and a half after you've had driver's ed. Then you have sort of a restricted license for a while, where you have to have a limit to one passenger and so forth. The riskiest driving over our lifetime is really in those youngest years, from age 14, 16, all the way till we're in our early mid-20s, is really the highest crash rate.
And especially if you're male.
Especially if you're male. And the first month and the first 6 months of driving, the most critical. 50% of teenagers crash in the first 6 months of licensure. So this is really the high point.
You know, I fit into that statistic. Maybe a story for later, but go ahead.
Yeah, so then as we mature and we get more experience behind the wheel, we start to mellow. The crash rates go down starting in the mid-20s. And we have a pretty, you know, we crash about every 20 years about. And then as we get much older, well past our 60s, especially when we get into our 80s, we start to see a pretty rapid increase in crashes again. We call that sort of the bathtub curve. And that is really high when you're really young and fairly high when you're really old. So most people think that you might start crashing when you start hitting 60 or 65, but it's really much later.
Mm, interesting. Now, Larry, I know you had, you talk about these in your class. What is happening to, you know, it can happen at several different ages, depending on how old you are. You can have a fit driver up through their 90s, over 100, I suppose. But what's happening to our senses and our abilities pertaining to driving as we get older?
I recently had a 100-year-old driver in my class.
Really?
Yes. What Dan is saying is absolutely true. The younger drivers, mostly inexperienced. The older drivers, a lot of it comes from the fact when you look at deaths per million miles driven, is the fact that our bodies as we age can't take those crashes as well as they used to. In other words, we don't heal as fast. We're more susceptible to fatality. And in the class, which is a four-hour class, there's no driving, no testing, we talk about a lot about change because that's what's happening. Change is inevitable in mm-hmm. life. We talk about eyesight. Most of us are now wearing glasses when we didn't used to when we started driving. Our hearing probably in most people is not as good. You mentioned reaction time. We talk about how cars have changed. And this has been a while ago, but one lady said, well, we used to have to crank them to start them, but that's, you know.
You had someone back in class that say that?
Yes, she did. Right. We talk about differences in roads. And another person who had driven many, many years said, well, they're paved now. And, you know, it's interesting. But people say, you know, how the roads have changed. We now have interstates. We didn't used to have those. We talk about how the laws have changed. And I always ask the question, what was the speed limit when most of us started driving? And most people don't know the answer to that. We also talk about new laws. For instance, one that just went into effect July 1 that many people don't know about is cars on the side of the road. It started out, it was emergency vehicles. You had to either pull over or slow down. Then it included garbage trucks and service vehicles and so forth. The law now says any time a vehicle is on the right side of the road with their four-way flashers going, you have to either slow down or get over in the other lane. So we talk about all of these things that are changing, and that's what we dwell a lot on.
Mm. One of the things that's been in the news, and I'm sure you've talked about it in classes, they are new to us, roundabouts. I imagine older drivers, many of them not fans of roundabouts.
Yeah, I think as people get more familiar with them, they're starting to learn. And we always point out, here's why we're seeing roundabouts, the benefits. Many fewer crashes, less serious crashes, no T-bones because of the way they're designed. They move a lot more traffic through in a given amount of time. And so, yes, we do talk about those. We talk about other engineering changes that are really helpful to older drivers, like large street signs up there instead of the little one posted over here on the corner that I can't read until I get up to it. rumble strips down the center of the highway and down the edge. This morning in the Gazette, there was an article about the steel cables on the interstates, and the studies are showing they are saving lives.
Mm. Dan, jump in here. You wanted to talk about
yeah,
what?
I just wanted to touch on the roundabout question, and that is that older drivers are much more susceptible at intersections, at crashes. And roundabouts for everybody are a little confusing on the front end, but that's what makes them so safe, is that we're sort of uncertain what everybody's doing, so you have to really pay attention.
Right.
And so roundabouts rarely have crashes.
I never thought about it that way. When you see a green light at an intersection, you assume you can assume that you're protected to cross through it, and you don't even check the cross traffic.
Exactly.
A roundabout, you would never do that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you're on your...
You really have to pay attention. What is that person doing? I'm slowing down. All of those things.
Well, Ben, we talk about that in class. I always say, just because the driver ahead of you is signaling, does that mean that driver's going to turn? No. Or if they're not signaling. And I just heard on NPR, Iowa Public Radio this morning, an ad from a state trooper that's been running for a long time, and he says defensive driving is assuming the driver around you is going to make a stupid mistake, and you have to be thinking ahead of time, okay, if that person does something like that, what can I do to avoid the crash?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thinking of worst case scenario, as you drive throughout the day and in little bits throughout the day, I guess, is one way to think about it. Dan, let me have you comment on some of the challenges that you face physically, the capabilities that people have as they age. Vision, there's different types of problems you can have with your vision, right?
Right. So it's not only sort of the acuity issues. So like when you go to the eye doctor to get glasses, we also just are unable to detect as well sort of looming things. So when a car is stopped in the road ahead, we're not as good as detecting a stopped object as we are when we are younger. So there are a lot of different perceptual processes, cognitive and thinking processes that are interacting while we drive that begin to diminish as we age. And that's really where we start to see problems in the older driver.
Mm-hmm. Night vision problems tend to increase with age.
Absolutely. People report, especially if you have cataracts, a lot of lights sort of develop sort of stars around them, become starry, a little foggy, and so forth. But the good news is, and Larry will tell you, that a lot of older drivers sort of self-select to not drive at night because they know of those limitations. So you see a lot of people avoiding nighttime driving.
Mm-hmm. So, Larry, you teach that in the class must be to recognize how your body is changing and adapt to it so that you can maintain a level of safety?
Yes, we do, because that is something that we need to look at. In other words, in our class, we have ways to evaluate. Personally, we don't do it verbally out in the class, but to do a checklist. You know, are you having problems with this, with this, with this?
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah. In other words, do you say often, that car came out of nowhere. I never saw it. It probably means, as Dan was talking about, the peripheral vision has probably decreased. I always have the students put their hands clear out to their side with their thumbs up and wiggle them and then say, okay, do you see your thumbs wiggling? If not, just start moving them in a little bit. And most of the people in our classes have to move those in. Their peripheral vision, looking at traffic coming from the side. The same thing like you were talking about, depth perception. If I'm meeting a car and I need to turn left in front of that vehicle, most older drivers are going to have more problems determining how fast is that car coming. Can I safely turn in front of that vehicle before it gets there?
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, a discussion about driving as we age, driving safely into our golden years. And joining us, Larry Nepple, just listening to him, instructor for AARP's driving safety program for something like 15 years. He's been conducting classes among seniors to sort of remind class members of the basics and changes in our driving environment, changes in our bodies as we age so that we can maintain safety. Dan McGehee, director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Dan, I think you brought some statistics along saying, point out just how old some of our oldest drivers are.
Yeah, so one of our colleagues, Melissa Spiegel at the Iowa DOT, we sent her a note this morning and said, I remember a statistic that how many licensed drivers there are in Iowa that are currently operating over the age of 100. And she said independently if sometimes they will pass away, but right now there are 74 drivers, 100 or above, licensed to drive in Iowa, and one of them that is 105. So Iowa has a really big spectrum of mm-hmm. drivers, and that's what makes it so interesting to do research on younger drivers, older drivers, and everybody in between, is that the challenge is that we have lots of different types of bodies and brains and eyeballs out there on our roads.
Now, we have a driver's license system here in Iowa. Larry, am I correct in saying once every 10 years that you need a new driver's license, or is it 5 years? I probably better check mine. It's going to be expired.
I think it's five.
Oh, years. No. Yep. I know what I'm going to do right after this show. When you go back to get your license renewed, are there checks there as people age, or wink and a nod, maybe not so much?
Until you get to be about, I think it's 70, there really isn't anything. I mean, you come up, you look in that screen, if you can do the eye exam, and if you don't have problems, you can pretty well get the license. And I had a gentleman in my class was talking about this with his mother, taking her to the driver's license station to get her license renewed. And I don't know how old she was, but he said she went in, sat in the front row, And a little bit later, he said, Mother, there's an opening up there. You can go. No, she said, I want to sit here just a little bit. He said, I know she was memorizing that vision chart so that she could pass that exam. And I think what it comes down to, age is not the important thing in this discussion because everybody's a different individual. So if you had a law and say, well, after the age of such and such, people shouldn't drive or something, that's not true. There can be an 85-year-old driver that's much better than somebody who's 50 that's driving out there.
Right, right. I wonder when Dan talks about self-regulation and discovering what your body is not doing as well as it used to do and coping with that, adapting to that, Larry, do you have a wide spectrum of people, let's just say, who are more or less self-aware about their capabilities? How do you handle those different situations when perhaps people, okay, maybe in some denial? I mean, those have got to be the toughest cases, right?
They are. Good friend of mine who taught this class a long time, Alan Demarest from Des Moines, said, one way or another, we are all going to quit driving someday. Well, you know, if you look at that, how does that happen? And it comes down to, do I want to make that decision or do I want to make that decision for me?
Have it made for me.
It used to be, Dad, give me the keys. And that went over like a lead balloon, you know? But what people need to do when they observe things, like maybe paint on the side of the car, frequent little fender benders, maybe running stoplights, having some problems making turns and so forth. It kind of are indicators of maybe people are having some problems and there needs to be some assessment. A person should ride with that person first before really trying to address the problem and then sort of talk about it a little bit, have more than one discussion, say there are things available. For instance, many hospitals and so forth have people on staff who can actually do driving tests with the people to see if they're having some problems. DOT can do that. And maybe as you talk about it, it's back to what you talked about. Maybe we limit the driving. The Iowa Department of Transportation has a program where they can send somebody out and sit down with a driver who has some problems and give what they call a conditional-type license. In other words, the person needs to go to the grocery store, to church, to the senior center, the doctor's office, and they will give a conditional license, say, okay, they can drive between certain hours of the day, they have to stay off the main roads and so forth, but still get around. And so as you talk to people, you know, that's the best way to do it, is to gradually do it. Maybe find someone who has recently decided to give up driving on their own and talk with that person and say, you know, there are other alternatives available and think about your safety and the safety of all the other people out there on the road.
Right. It's something to chuckle about, someone memorizing the eye chart, but that person out on the road is actually endangering lives.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dan.
Yeah, and I think We think about the safety of our own loved ones, but many, many times we hear from people who have been affected by an older driver where a family member knew that they were probably not the best driver. And there's a lot of guilt that comes from that if you injure or kill somebody on the road and knowing that your mother, father, grandmother, grandfather has had driving issues.
And you as a family member might have intervened.
Exactly.
Mm. Join our conversation, Dan McGehee of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the UI, Larry Nepo with the AARP. He's been teaching driving safety programs. We're talking about driving as we age. Join us with your stories of driving and getting older, challenges perhaps you have experienced or perhaps experienced with an aging loved one. What challenges, what stories can you tell us? What questions do you have? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Again, we're saying in terms of age groups, those teens are the most risky drivers, the most, just look at the insurance. I had, now they're moving out of that category, teenage boys. Boy, you watch your insurance rates, and that will tell you sooner than anything how risky teen drivers are, right?
Yeah, in fact, I have a great story on that. One of our daughter's classmates borrowed our car while we were on holiday, and we had a text while we were in Europe of him saying, "I just had this little fender bender in your car." He's 19 years old.
Right.
And so, yeah, exactly. And then he had to report to me that he crashed my car. So.
Okay. Let me fill in your statistic from earlier, right after how you're likely to have a crash right after you get your license. Is that
About 50% of teens in the first 6 months of driving crash.
Okay. Young Ben Kiefer gets his license, goes over across town in Cedar Falls to pick up his very first date in his car alone, picks up the date, and drives back. It was an icy day. Slides into a police car. That is my fill in the statistic with a story. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Nobody injured. And we had a nice date, by the way.
Okay.
reaction time. When you talk about adapting your driving so that you're aware, perhaps your reaction time isn't as good. You know, we talk about left turns as being really a challenging thing. Can we think out, Larry, alternative routes to the supermarket, to the church, so that we avoid those left turns?
One of the things we talk about in class is making a series of right-hand turns so that you don't have to make a left-hand turn. And I've been told in class that UPS drivers are taught that very same thing, that at intersections that are a problem, to do just that. In other words, if I want to turn right and then shortly turn left into a parking garage, there are several intersections. There's traffic coming and going. It probably doesn't take me any more time, and it's much safer if I go up one block, over one block, down one block, and make three right turns to get into that parking garage, and I've not encountered near as much traffic. And so that's one thing that, you know, we can do to sort of reduce our risk of having a crash in that situation.
Mm-hmm. When you offer that as a solution to members in your class, do you have sort of an aha expression come over some of the faces and go, "Wow, that's easy"?
Yeah, some people say that. And then I have people say, "I've been doing that for years." You know?
Oh, they got to it.
It's something they figured out.
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting. Dan, and you test different ages. We've got to go to a break here, but at your driving simulator, you test different ages to test the very things we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, young, old, neurologically impaired drivers, people that might have Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, may have suffered a stroke. We're looking at sort of the common neurological and cognitive processes involved in driving, and that processing is a really important part of seeing as well, which increases that delay in responding.
I want to take a short break and be back and get to some of your calls. We'd like to hear. Well, I offered my embarrassing crash as a kid story, so we don't expect a crash story necessarily, but tell us your stories of driving and getting older. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. We're talking about driving as we age, maintaining safety. DOT statistics, as of 2017, there were about 176,000 licensed drivers in Iowa over the age of 75 years old. So imagine that. Iowa ranks fourth in the nation in percentage of population over the age of 65, second only to Florida in percentage of licensed drivers over 85. The oldest driver we know out there licensed by the state of Iowa is 105, says Dan McGehee. We'll be back. Dan McGehee, Larry Knepel, and hopefully your stories, your questions, as we explore driving safely into our golden years. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, perhaps retitling this edition Road to Road. We are talking about driving as we age. Iowa, as many of you know, is one of the oldest states in the nation, a percentage of population over 65. We are ranking fourth in that. But Iowa is second only to Florida in the percentage of licensed drivers over 85. We're talking about things we can do as driving becomes more challenging, changes in our body, in our vision, peripheral vision, night vision, how we see objects moving, our reaction times, how we can cope with that so that we can continue to be drivers, safe drivers on our roads and highways. Larry Nepple is with us. He's an instructor for the AARP's Driving Safety Program. Dan McGehee of the University of Iowa's National Advanced Driving Simulator. He's a professor in the Department of Industrial and Systems Engineering at the UI. Looking to you to fill us in on some stories. Your stories of driving and getting older, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. First half hour, we talked a lot about vision and some reaction time. One thing we didn't talk about, Larry, perhaps you can address this quickly. As we get older, some of us have cognitive problems. What sorts of issues do you bring out in your class?
Well, we talk about not only physical but cognitive, because as we age, we know that maybe our mind isn't as sharp about some things. I liken that, and I tell my grandkids, my brain is sort of like the hard drive. Mine's got a whole bunch of stuff on there. It takes a lot longer for me to find the information than it does theirs.
That's a nice way of putting it.
But we do talk about those things because, as I said, maybe people who are having problems making turns or not stopping at stoplights, that there could be some cognitive issues there. And so we talk about all the different possibilities and looking at some maybe evaluation. You can have, as I said, many hospitals have occupational therapists who are trained to work with people to evaluate them. It doesn't mean they're going to give up their license. It just means an evaluation to see whether or not there are things that could be done to make that person a safer driver.
Mm-hmm. And we know, Dan, from our earlier conversations, distraction is a big hazard to driving. If you've got cognitive problems, you're easily distracted, this is a problem.
Yeah, and it's, you know, smartphones are not just for teenagers anymore. My 88-year-old father-in-law is an expert on the iPhone, and even when I was driving with him once, he got a call and he wanted to answer it, you know. So everybody's using smartphones. It's an amazing technology in terms of a link to the world that, you know, invades every part of our life, including while we drive.
Right. Get some hands-free technology, Bluetooth technology, if you're going to be driving and want to continue to talk on that phone. Let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. Loads of people wanting to chip in on this topic. Let's get as many as we can this half hour. Wes is with us in Iowa City. Hi, Wes.
Hey, Ben, it's Wes Gallagher. Yes, you may recall.
Hi, Wes. Great to have you call in here. I see on my screen. Yeah, go ahead.
85 and a half now. I retired from being a book peddler at 75, and ever since then I've been driving for local automobile dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
A shuttle
service.
No, I've not been a shuttle person. I do dealer trades and things like that. So I have experienced all the new little things like rumble strips and roundabouts and all of those things, cell phones, et cetera. And I guess what I really want to say is I took a look at the Earth's circumference the other day, as I do every now and then. It's 24,109 miles. Every once in a while, someone will say, well, how many miles have you driven in these 10 years? And I would say probably at least three times around the globe. But it is getting more difficult out there.
Do you have some tips for people who are maybe encountering some of the problems you seem to be having?
Well, I would say when it's time to slow down and quit, do it. I'm about to do that. Even the technology on the instrument panel is such anymore, with the push, the touch buttons and all that business. It ain't like it used to be. So if you're wanting to change a station and you're in between semis on I-80, you really better pay attention.
Mm.
Anyway, I've had fun. I'm coming to the end of it. I keep squeezing in one more month, and I would say that the night driving thing is something I'm going to avoid. I'm probably going to stop doing this. I've had both eyes fixed now. I know I've been, tabbed with.
Wes, quickly before we go, because a lot of people are probably saying,
sure,
wow, how courageous to make that decision for yourself. in terms of safety. That couldn't have been an easy decision. You have alternatives, though, right?
Yeah, stay home and read books.
There is an excellent alternative. Wes in Iowa City, thanks so much. 1-866-780-9100. We talked, Wes mentioned the new cars, the whole dashboard, the instrument panel is all new. And I know, Larry, you have at the AARP a session that is especially for getting acquainted, making sure you're acquainted with a dashboard and instrument panel.
AARP, along with AAA and Occupational Therapists Association, have a program called CarFit. There's no charge to it. We set it up in a parking lot someplace. We just did one up at Iowa Central in Cedar Kirkwood and at Cedar Rapids in early July. You bring your own car in. We have people that talk to you about, do you know the different things that you should know about settings in your car? And I remember one lady coming in a number of years ago said, my husband did all the driving. He's passed away. I'm now having to drive, and I don't know much about this car. And so we showed her where the adjustment was for the shoulder belt and lap belt on the side of the post. Do they know how to adjust their mirrors properly? Are they positioned properly so that they're at least 10 inches away from the steering wheel, so that in the unfortunate event that the airbag ignites, explodes, that they're not going to be hurt by that? Hand position on the steering wheel to stay away from the safety bags. Can they see at least 3 inches above their steering wheel? Can they comfortably get their foot on the brake pedal and the accelerator, not just the tip of their toes? And then we ask that we give them, say, stop, and see how quickly they can react to that.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea is to say, do you fit your car? We also look at, are they having some particular problems? Maybe some neck problems, they can't do the head checks. We have some adaptive devices that our occupational therapists will talk to them about that might help alleviate that problem.
Mm-hmm. We'll give it at the end of the hour, too, I hope here, Larry. But what's a good contact for AARP for those wanting to find out all about driving education programs at AARP? How can people get in touch? Do you have a number there?
Yes, I do. They can call for Iowa, 319-270-3774, and talk to Connie anything about the driver safety program, where the classes might be held, when we might have the next car fit.
Okay. And also online, you can check out aarp.org/drive if you'd like to check it out that way. Let's go back to our phones. Katie is with us in Davenport. Hi, Katie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ben. Thank you. I was calling firstly to comment on how crazy to me that 50% statistic was. I'm glad I was not on the side that you were.
Everybody's okay. No injuries. Go ahead.
Is that a national statistic or is that Iowa?
That's a national statistic that's unique to the U.S. and Canada. Europe is quite different in their driver training, but we start driving really young in the U.S. And yeah. Canada.
And it was also, okay. Dan, one of the reasons, we'll get to you in just a moment, but we have now a graduated driver's license system precisely for that reason, don't we, Dan?
Is in fact, a lot of the younger driver research that's been done here at the university has been the data that was generated from our studies at Clear Creek Amana High School, West High, City High, rural high schools, all the way up to Minnesota. A lot of the data from that was used for national policies for graduated driver's licensing systems.
Mm-hmm. Katie, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, my grandmother is 89 years old, and she is one of the most fiercely independent women. If you want to see her, you've got to get penciled in. She's got card club twice a week, bowling twice a week. She goes to the senior center and does everything. To lose her license would be a very devastating life change for her.
Mm-hmm.
I do notice that she has started to self-regulate some of her driving habits, like you said, driving at night, things like that. What resistance, I mean, you mentioned that it's like holding a lead balloon over somebody to say, nope, you're done driving. What resistance and what are the more loving ways that you can say, like, hey, would you be interested in learning about these programs for older drivers?
So you obviously have some concerns about her safety. So let's try to get you a few tips. Larry or Dan, what can we help Katie out with?
Well, Katie, I think, as I mentioned earlier, conversation is the best thing you can do, is talk with your grandmother. Perhaps if you know someone who has recently decided to retire from driving, talk to her and say, it's not the end of the world. From a personal standpoint, my mother, my father, and my mother-in-law all voluntarily knew when it was time for them to give up their driving. So great that we didn't have to deal with that.
Yep.
And I think that's what the people need to look at. And then the other thing is, look at the other alternatives that are available. Of course, taxi or bus. If you're in a rural area, those maybe aren't quite as helpful. Other family members or neighbors. I use the little role playing in my class. Well, I'll pull out somebody and say, okay, we're Susan, you and I are neighbors across the fence. And I say, would you come over for a cup of coffee? There's something I want to talk to you about. So we come over and we chit chat, how are the family and all this. And then I say, you know, I've been thinking my driving is getting a little foggy. My kids have been trying to tell me this. They can probably take me where I need to go most of the time, but once in a while they're busy with the kids. Would you take me if I need to? And they'd say yes. Then I say, okay, let's turn the role around. You invite me over for coffee. You say that. Will you ask me if I will take you? And they're mostly hesitant. Why? Because we don't want to impose on other people. We're too independent. But you were more than willing to give me a ride. Why won't you ask me if I can help you? So, you know, there are many things out there that we can do.
Katie, let me chip in here, too. Recently, I was away from the microphone. I had knee surgery, happened to be my right knee. I could not drive for 8 weeks. That really showed me how driving affects your independence. But another solution here, too, perhaps for your grandmother, is, well, there are taxis, but there's also Uber and Lyft. And I have to tell you, it's much less expensive than I thought it was. And you know what? You have some great conversations when you talk to some of these Uber or Lyft drivers. It's really amazing, Larry.
People, you know, may think, well, it's going to cost me a lot of money if I do that. And I show them what it has cost me to operate a car for a year because I've got good records. And it's not cheap. You're talking probably at least $3,000-$4,000 a year to operate that car. There are many things out there we can do that we can rely on that don't have to be our own driving.
Right, and good old public transportation is out there. Depending on your community, you may find a connection there. Katie, I hope we had plenty of little advice there for your grandmother, and good luck on that conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. A big point we want to get to before the hour comes to an end. Maybe we'll get back to callers, but let's see. Dan, I wanted you to talk about driver assistance systems. What are in new cars right now that help not only older people, but all of us drive more safely, but in particular older people, right?
Yeah, I think today, in today's model years, 2018, in the last year or so, we're seeing a really big proliferation of new technologies enter in the vehicle. From lane-keeping systems, you know, older drivers, younger drivers that are distracted, anybody that's distracted, you drift out of your lane, the car will automatically just gently corrects your position. Automatic emergency braking systems, if we're not paying attention to the car ahead, the brakes will slam on at the very last
second. Are these being put on base models of cars?
These are on base models. You can buy a $20,000 car that has this technology today. And certainly in the next 2 or 3 years, 100% of cars will have these technologies. So if you're contemplating buying a new car, if you're older or younger for that matter, I tell people all the time, you need to buy a car today because the technologies are here now. Make sure that you look for things like automatic emergency braking, lane keeping systems, and so forth. And just like the CarFit program with AARP, we have a website that we've developed with the National Safety Council called mycardoeswhat.org, which covers all of these technologies and how they work. And so we have a guy and his dog, Rick and Scout, that go through each of these technologies, and you can learn about them. So now is the time to buy a new car.
Okay.
Or lease one.
Larry.
I've had a couple of people in class say they have bought these, and they said, I don't know how to operate all this stuff. And then I said, the salesperson that sold you that car has failed you. Go back to that dealership and learn, you know, besides reading your manual, on what you can do. Dan, I think I'm right. 2018 was the year that all new cars were supposed to have backup cameras. I'm not sure if that's still in place.
Yeah, by law.
I find backup cameras are super, particularly in parking lots when you're backing out and you've got a great big SUV on one side of you and a big topper on the pickup on the other side of you and you can't really see because those cameras can look laterally. Parallel parking. I mean, right. They help. They're a great safety feature.
And somehow they have cameras that can look at your car from on top of you. I don't get that, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I think another technology that's also becoming more commonplace is something called cross-traffic alert, and that's using sensors in your bumper that can look down the way. So if there's a pedestrian walking, it alerts you before even the camera can see. So look for a cross-traffic alert.
Cars getting smarter to benefit all of us. Also, older drivers. Let's go to Terry in Toledo. Hi, Terry. Coming up on the end of our hour, but we're glad to have you on, Terry. What's your slant
no
on this?
No problem. I was going to say the night vision. Young people sometimes don't know what we're really talking about. What I found was I got to the point where at nighttime, or as I got later into the evening, the bright lights of people's cars were, it was like I was flashing them, turn down their bright lights when they actually had them down low. That's when I realized I was starting to get night vision.
Mm. And did you recognize it immediately? What did you do about it?
It took a while to realize. I thought it was just the new cars have got the new headlights, the LEDs that are so bright that the dims are, just about like to blind you. And so before I finally retired, I got to where I just tried backing out on how much nighttime driving I would do. Okay.
Yep.
But I spent 18 years as a semi-truck driver. And two things that I noticed real simply was they always say the boys are the worst drivers. I don't agree with that anymore after 18 years of driving. It's a case the boys might get into accidents, but the females nowadays, I would say 70% of the people I've had pass me on the highway or do stupid moves, stuff like that, were actually females. You got the point where you'd see and say, well, here comes somebody up.
All right, Larry, we're gonna leave you just with your first name and not a last name, Terry, for some obvious reasons.
Well, I mean, that's just it. And the other thing I noticed with the law, with them, the meaning of the laws, okay, like turn signals, stuff like that, have taken on an entire new meaning to people going down the road.
Okay, Terry, thank you from Toledo. I really don't
care.
I think they're good, of course, good drivers of both sexes. Do we have any statistics on gender and driving, Dan McGeehee?
Yeah, I think it's a younger driver issue. Males tend to be overrepresentative in those crashes, but after that, they kind of mellow out. So.
Okay. Kate is with us in Cedar Falls. Hi, Kate. Have to be quick, but thank you for being on the program. Kate, are you there in Cedar Falls? Okay. Can't get Kate. That'll have to be our last non-caller. I guess we've run out of time. Give us a vision, Dan McGeehee, of what's to come, maybe not in the next 5 years, but in 10, 20 years. We're working toward completely automated cars. You have a car or you call a car, and whether you're young or old, you walk out, get in, there's no driver, and off you go to your place.
Yeah, as Larry said, Uber and Lyft are really good ride-sharing technologies are here today that people should really explore as they get older. But in the long-range future, we're still decades away from the fully robot car that can pick you up like Uber and Lyft can do. But something that's unique about the state of Iowa is that it's not only is the University of Iowa working with the Iowa DOT doing high-definition mapping, that's going to enable older drivers from the rural areas in particular to be able to access those more highly automated vehicles first nationwide. And we're still decades away from that fully automated car. But certainly Iowa is way ahead of the curve in terms of many other states.
Okay. You want to find out more about Larry's work here with the AARP driving safety programs, all the things that AARP has on offer to help you remain a safe driver into your older years. Larry, remind us of how people get in touch as we wind up this hour.
Well, as Ben said, you can go to aarp.org/drive. Find out more information about the class, also where they're being held. Or you can locally call 319-270-3774.
And this can also be applicable to if you have a loved one who you want to find some more hints. Don't have it quite in your head how you're going to start that conversation. You can start with AARP, Larry?
Yes, you can.
Okay, very good. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Larry Nepel, instructor for AARP's Driving Safety Program for more than 15 years. We appreciate you coming in, Larry, and your expertise.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege, Ben.
Dan McGeehee, director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Dan, thanks for all the comments on aging and driving and the research behind it. We always appreciate you having a conversation with you.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. We also had help from Shirley Wong today. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Tomorrow's a Politics Wednesday. Jonathan Hasid of Iowa State University. Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Oh, plenty to talk about, as always, on Politics Day. Hope you'll be there tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.